From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In Moscow, Edward Snowden is apparently out of the airport. In Washington, NSA surveillance is hot and controversial. In Las Vegas, the country's top hackers are watching. The Black Hat Conference and the DEF CON Hacking Conference, a week-long gathering of the security savvy and hacker elite, are underway in Vegas. Yesterday, the chief of the NSA, General Keith Alexander, made his pitch straight to the hacker crowd and got some pitch in return.
The whole reason I came here was to ask you to help us make it better. And if you disagree with what we're doing, then you should help twice as much.
Read the Constitution.
I have. You should too.
Read the Constitution, said the heckler at Black Hat yesterday, and there was more. The NSA needs the country's best cyber minds, hackers, geeks, security freaks, to do its work. After all the revelations, are they on board? This hour on Point, the NSA, surveillance, and the hacker view. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on hackers. Are you ready still to help the NSA? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Let's hear a little bit more of that Alexander presentation yesterday, keynote address at the Black Hat Conference in Las Vegas. And some of the back and forth there was no small amount of heckling salted in. Here you'll hear the general, head of the NSA, and then we get into heckler land.
Our nation takes stopping terrorism as one of the most important things.
Freedom!
Exactly. And with that, when you think about it, how do we do that? Because we stand for freedom. Not that. But I think what you're saying is that in these cases, what's the decision? Where's the discussion? And what tools should we have to stop those?
No, I'm saying I don't trust you. You lied to Congress. Why would we believe that you're not lying to us right now?
I haven't lied to Congress.
What about SKS? Congressional testimony.
Wait for the question session.
A little interaction in Las Vegas yesterday at Black Hat. Freedom. BS, you heard bleeped out there. Don't trust you. You lied to Congress. Why should we believe that you're not lying to us right now? And General Keith Alexander, the director of the National Security Agency, NSA, with his responses there. Let's dive into this world. With us first from Las Vegas is Kim Zetter, senior writer covering cybercrime, civil liberties, privacy, and security for Wired magazine. She's been at the Black Hat Conference this week. DEF CON opens today. She was at Black Hat yesterday when General Alexander made his case. Kim Zetter, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Why does the head of the NSA come to this conference, come to Hackerland, Security Pro Land, this week?
Well, Black Hat actually isn't a hacker conference. So there are two conferences back-to-back. Black Hat is the first one, and this one is for actually security professionals. And DEF CON is the one that follows, and that one's for hackers. The Black Hat conference is largely computer security officers in companies. So it's really a business-oriented audience. And for that reason, he got quite a lot of support, actually, for his talk.
Right. In Vegas, full of hackers. I mean, DEF CON's coming up. I think you've probably got some sprinkled in right there at Black Hat as well. Why is this crowd so important to him? I mean, back in Washington, you've got huge hearings going on at the Senate. Everybody's watching Edward Snowden, who's still in Moscow, out of the airport, we hear now. The president's sitting down with leading congressional figures today to talk about the NSA and surveillance and privacy. But here's the chief in Vegas talking to this crowd. Why, Kim?
Well, this is a highly technical crowd, obviously, and obviously these NSA programs are technical programs. And the convergence between security and privacy is an important technical consideration. And also, this is an audience that is very somewhat libertarian in focus, but very civil liberties focused. And so the government is trying to win over their approval for these programs He has come in the past. He came to DEF CON last year, Alexander, pleading with the audience to help them design programs that would sort of combine privacy and security. It's unclear. I mean, he's obviously not really serious about this because he doesn't really want a discussion. He doesn't really want feedback from the audience. These programs are already in place. So it's a little disingenuous.
This is big business. DEF CON may have a lot of hackers. Black Hat has a lot, as you say, of security professionals and executives. The U.S. government spends $30 billion annually on cybersecurity goods and services. So does that trump civil liberties? I mean, after all, for some no small number perhaps in that hall, the NSA and the U.S. government are big customers.
They are. They're big customers, and it's an interesting sort of issue here because the government hasn't done cybersecurity defense very well. So, you know, in coming to this audience, there's a lot of criticism just on that end as well, that the government isn't doing what this audience thinks that they should be doing. So there are sort of two disappointing views on this in this audience, and that is, one, the privacy issue that they're not handling very well, and then also just the defense of cybersecurity.
DEF CON, the more hackery side of this week's Vegas meetings, has disinvited federal officials this week. As far as that goes, I'm reading here Alex Stamos, he's a member of the Black Hat Advisory Board, saying that he's worried about a backlash. It's going to be much harder for them to recruit, that is NSA, because a lot of people are going to think twice about whether they want to get into these ethical situations. A piece in Bloomberg says that there's now a moral dilemma for hackers about whether to continue friendly relations with the NSA. What do you say, Kim?
I think that's short-lived. I think that, you know, the NSA programs have been going on for years, and DEF CON, in fact, invited General Alexander to speak last year. So, you know, he's always been controversial. The NSA has always been controversial, and DEF CON had no problem, you know, keynoting him, letting him keynote last year. And, in fact, the audience last year, there was no heckling, and that was an audience of all hackers. So I think that the reaction right now is largely based on the Snowden revelations. There's just a lot of heat around that right now and the controversy around that. You know, in the end, government contracts are still lucrative for a lot of these people. And I think in the long term, you know, the ethical considerations are fairly small and short-lived for many security professionals.
Kim Zetter, please stand by there in Las Vegas. Also with us from Las Vegas, joining us right now in Nevada, is Moxie Marlinspike, computer security researcher, hacker, co-founded, served as chief technology officer for Whisper Systems, a company that produces security and privacy software apps for cell phones, mobile devices. In 2011, the company was acquired by Twitter. Moxie is at Black Hat and was there for General Alexander's keynote address yesterday. Moxie Marlinspike, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, thank you.
What did you think of the general's presentation to this crowd?
I thought it was interesting. I think, you know, he is trying to fight a cultural war for this community, and I think he actually did a pretty good job presenting something that was received, it seems, pretty favorably.
Why does he need this community's support so much, Moxie?
I mean, I think that the culture that is defined by this community has a lot of overlap with the NSA and its employees and contractors who do business with the NSA. That there's a lot of people here who are in that industry, and I think it would have a negative impact on the NSA if the culture of this community changed to be critical of people's involvement, and it would be difficult for them to hire people or to do business with people who are kind of necessary for what they're trying to accomplish.
These are great minds, great hackers. General Alexander was at DEF CON last year, Hackerland, made a presentation there. Edward Snowden has come out since and revealed much more than the general revealed last year, and a lot of material that you could clearly see is contradicting some of the things he said. We heard that heckler say, essentially, why should we trust you? What about the trust question in the hacker community, Moxie?
Well, I think, you know, that question is right on. You know, they clearly have the NSA clearly has a credibility problem at this point. They keep trying to frame, you know, this as a conversation or a dialogue, you know, that they welcome this debate. But that's, you know, obviously not true. The only reason we're having this conversation is because of these leaks. You know, it wasn't something that they initiated voluntarily, and they're just trying to do damage control now. And so, you know, I think the question is right on. You know, how can we trust them to be giving us the facts, to be, you know, telling us the truth when, you know, it's clear that they haven't been operating entirely transparently for quite some time now.
It's a lot of money, $30 billion spent there. Maybe it can attract the top hackers and cyber minds in this country, whether it's fully open or not, Moxie.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think that's a major problem, you know, in terms of sort of trying to define the narrative of this community of, like, what are the things that we value? What are the things that we want to encourage? What are the things that we want to discourage? That the money question makes it difficult in the sense that a lot of people here, you know, are already either government employees or working for defense contractors or companies that do business with defense contractors. And so in a lot of ways, I think, you know, they sort of know where their bread is buttered and, you know, might be reluctant to, you know, have the... you know, the critique that they would otherwise.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about NSA surveillance and the hacker view, getting the perspective from the big Black Hat conference in Las Vegas, security professionals there, the DEF CON hacker conference opening Las Vegas this week. Kim Zetter is with us from Wired Magazine. She's in Las Vegas covering the conference this week. Moxie Marlinspike was there for the speech yesterday. Hacker, computer security researcher was at General Alexander's speech. Here's just a little bit more from that. General Alexander talking to the room saying, look, you know, if there are consequences to leaks like Edward Snowden's.
If we tell everybody exactly what we're doing, then the adversaries will know how to get through our defenses.
This is a crowd that knows what the defenses are about. And he went on, urging the attendees there to accept the NSA's version, its statements on what it's doing.
Read the congressional testimony. Look at what we're talking about here, because this is our nation's future. This is what we've done with these programs. And in my opinion, that's not bull. Those are facts. And what we see coming at our country is more of the same. So the question that we have with all of us, so what do we do? Let's begin that discussion.
Let's begin that discussion. My guest, Moxie Marlinspike, says it's not much of a discussion. Questions yesterday, almost all of them were screened in advance for the general, and yet a lot of support in that room because this is big business. There are security issues on the table. Kim Zetter, we saw a lot of fire at the Senate hearings in Washington yesterday, lots of criticism of the NSA. I mean, where's the bigger blaze at this point, Kim? Is it in the public at large? Is it among elected representatives? Is it among the hackers and security professionals? Who's more concerned about what we've learned?
Well, I think it's largely the public. Obviously, Capitol Hill has known about these programs for a long time. They haven't been able to speak about them, though. So the Snowden leaks sort of unleashes them. They've had to hold back. So we're seeing some fire from Congress that maybe they've withheld for a number of years, and they haven't been able to talk about publicly. The public, however, has been in the dark about this. I mean, we've had hints of this. Even the call records, we had a story back in 2006 from USA Today disclosing that the government was obtaining call records. But I think what Snowden leaks have really allowed us to see is, just in one fell swoop, the massive scope of the surveillance that's going on and the massive number of documents that they're obtaining. So I think right now the shock and the anger is pretty much with the public who's just getting used to, you know, the facts and all of this.
Yesterday, General Alexander telling the Black Hat Conference, look, 54 times this has been effective in helping us stop terrorist attacks. There was a lot of skepticism about that number on Capitol Hill yesterday. NSA Deputy Director John Inglis was before the Senate Judiciary Committee, told Vermont Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy that Section 215, the Patriot Act, allows for data collection, but the NSA's PRISM program has contributed to stopping terrorist plots, not solely responsible. Here's Inglis, a little bit of Leahy.
This capability, the 215 collection of metadata, is focused on the homeland. It's focused on detecting plots that cross the foreign to homeland domain.
But
given
it
only 13
it wasn't
of those
about
plots,
four in 54 cases.
It was not, sir.
Thank
given
you.
That only 13 of those plots had a homeland nexus, it therefore only had its principal opportunity to make a contribution in 13 or less.
Leahy's saying it's not dozens, maybe less than that. Moxie, what about the sense in the room here? Again, you were there yesterday, of how critical these programs in the extent and scale that we've come to understand them in the public to be exercised, how important they are and how whether they need to go on in the way they've been exercised.
Like I said, I think the NSA has a serious credibility problem at this point, so it's hard for us to trust their own analysis on their own efficacy of these programs. Certainly we know that we don't have all the information. My understanding is that many of the people that have more information than we do in Congress, for instance, have been pretty skeptical about these programs' efficacy. So,
we were watching the Twitter flow on this yesterday of attendees, their hackers and others. Here's one, Nick writing, you might as well throw stones unless you want some of that NSA money. Then another saying, so you're either raging against the man or you want their dollars. Seems a bit lacking in creativity. Let's bring our listeners in. Aaron in Northwood, Iowa. Aaron, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, I've been an IT professional for about 15 years, and I think what one of the speakers just said, it really is a credibility issue, and you're really coming up against, yes, these are hackers, but you're coming up with concerned citizens who happen to have a niche for hacking, and that it was what the government's concerned about. And at the same time, that's what the hackers are concerned about, because with the government, there is no credibility right now, and they just have lost it all. And as a citizen, first and foremost, that is my concern as far as the privacy issues. And what you're going to have come out of here isn't IT professionals. It's going to be more of the Edward Snowden that are going to be like, you know what, as a concerned citizen, I'm going to do this for, you know, as a citizen, not as a hacker type thing. And that's where I think you're having the issues, and you're hearing the comments and the hecklers and this and that. This isn't from hackers. It's from concerned citizens that happen to have a skill that the government feels threatened by with, the vulnerability and all the other stuff that's happening right now.
Aaron, I appreciate your call. Your line's a little tough, but I hear you saying, unless the government reestablishes credibility, you may get more Edward Snowdens out of this crowd than otherwise. Moxie, how about that? Part of what the general seemed to be saying was, in a way, don't go Snowden on us. Help us.
I think this is a common persuasion tactic, right, where he's trying to make the only possible avenue of dissent to join the NSA to, so-called help change their programs to do it the right way, you know, which I think is laughable, right? I think if what you're interested in is criticizing the NSA and trying to, you know, change the way that the, you know, NSA is operating, I don't think that joining the NSA is necessarily the way to do that.
Maybe not right now, but the general saying, look, we are doing it right, asserting yesterday. Alex in Charlotte, North Carolina. Alex, what do you think? You're on the air.
Well, I think, the hard line that you thought the previous caller was at, I'm right on board with that. Anybody who's buying anything that Alexander's saying is either a collaborator or is fooling themselves.
But he wants collaboration, Alex. He's saying, come on, we need your talent. We need your skills. Work with me.
And many despots in history have made appeals to the public to help them in their needs. The hacker community has the ability to understand the totality of the power of all this. And since that is ingrained in the foundation of the entire mentality, this is actually a one of the few rare opportunities that we have for individuals to start turning things back around and getting our country back to something that more resembles freedom and liberty that we hold for the ideals.
Alex, we've got it. Let me get one more, if I may. We've got your angle. Joe in Melbourne, Florida. Joe, you're on.
Good morning. Hello,
Hi.
Tom.
Hi.
I believe the issue for these talented individuals is not an unwillingness to serve, but an unwillingness to find themselves part of an organization, in this instance government, that demands an allegiance that leaves conscience at the door. We raise our young people through our home schools and churches to distinguish right from wrong. My understanding is that Private Manning, as an example, he didn't go public because he observed the slaughter of civilians, but because he observed his superiors changing the explanation for it, lying to the American public. And as long as you have young people, and of course I'm a senior now, I can't afford in my 40s and 50s to leave my family and give up my everything I have to come out and speak out. When I do, I risk losing everything, including my family. But these young people in their 20s, 30s, with a crisis of conscience, if the government wants talented people, they either need to absent their conscience from right and wrong or find a way to say, bring things to us that you find troubling. We'll find a way, but don't ask these people to lie for the government. I think that's what's at the source, and
Joe,
I thank you for the opportunity.
Joe, appreciate your call. Kim, how did you see the general's credibility coming across yesterday and the reception? I mean, it was by no means all heckling. I mean, Moxie tweeted, you know, we had the opportunity to boo him off the stage and applauded instead. There was plenty of applause there, but what about this credibility question in that hall, Kim? Does the general have it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there is a large contingent that is supportive of the NSA and that actually works with the NSA. I think in general, even though people may support as well, they also have concerns about the transparency issue here. We don't know the full extent of these programs. We're getting in drips and drabs, and the NSA sort of reluctantly has a presentation like this only because they're forced to. So I think that, you know, on the one hand, you can still do business with the government and still have these, you know, conscientious concerns. I think the caller from Florida is exactly right, is that, you know, a lot of people do have this concern about being asked to have this sort of blind allegiance. And I think we will see, you know, more and more people maybe not wanting to work with the government. We may see, I think, more leaks, definitely. I think that that empowers other people to kind of step forward. But in the end, again, these are large contracts, and the government can be quite persuasive about convincing people that they are credible. So it goes both ways. I think a lot of people are very skeptical of the NSA, but whether or not that translates into them walking away from the NSA is unclear.
Kim Zetter with Wired, please stand by in Las Vegas. And Moxie, Marlin Spiker, it's great to have you from there as well. I want to bring a Washington voice in here right here. Alan Butler is Appellate Advocacy Counsel at the Electronic Privacy Information Center in Washington. Alan, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
We had this interesting juxtaposition yesterday out in Vegas. Here's General Alexander. He has showed up out there in jeans and T-shirt, you know, to sort of be down with the hacker crowd. DEF CON last year, here he was with Black Hat. At the same time, and he's making his case saying, work with us, we need your minds. At the same time, in Washington, we're seeing some pretty tough grilling yesterday of the deputy chief at the NSA. And we're seeing more information, more leaks coming out through The Guardian of more information on NSA programs. Do these things fit together, Alan? Is the NSA earning the credibility in Washington that it needs to keep American hackers on board across the country?
Well, I think these things fit together in the sense that there's a shift in focus, both in the hacker community in Las Vegas and in the Senate, really, to amending these programs. I think that there's broad recognition, especially as to the metadata program, that it is unlawful under the current statute. I think that a lot of congressional representatives recognize that, and that's why they were really grilling the executive officials yesterday.
We had more coming out in The Guardian yesterday on this X Key Score program. Can you describe what that is, Alan?
Well, so far what we know about X Key Score is really that it's a database accumulating internet data that's collected by the NSA, but we have a slideshow and we don't know yet exactly how that program's used. The slideshow is a few years old, so we really only know that it's, you know, another database that the NSA is using to collect information that's sent over the internet.
The instant interpretation was that it meant the NSA could dip right into all of your internet communication. Is that clear?
I'm not sure if it's clear yet. I think we're still trying to sort out, you know, what those slides mean. And again, as we've dealt with some of these other new programs, we're still trying to, you know, figure out exactly what the legal authority is and what the rules are in place to use those programs.
And to the issue of credibility, was the NSA shown to have been truthful in the past in describing its programs with this latest revelation on X key score?
Well, I think the problem with credibility right now is the, as have been mentioned by the other speakers here, the problem of secrecy and a lack of transparency. I think that, you know, General Alexander got into hot water last year, and now he's not trusted out in Las Vegas and in other and in the Senate as well because of statements he made about the extent of these programs that have proved to be ultimately false, especially, again, as to the metadata program. Last year at DEF CON, he said that they were not gathering data on millions of Americans. And, you know, this year we learned that that's, in fact, not true. And now they openly admit that they gather this telephone metadata. And now they say, but, you know, we have these policies in place. Well, that's not the same thing that he said last year. And that's where I think the root of the credibility problem.
Moxie, you're out of this hacker community. Describe the relationship here. I mean, part of it, as Kim says, is people contracting, and it's big business with the NSA. But I understand hackers are interacting in other ways as well, pointing out flaws, doors, holes in the security. Whether they're working directly with the NSA or not, does a lot of that go on, Moxie?
Sure. I mean, you know, hackers and people from this community do a tremendous amount of security research and publish their results, which, you know, oftentimes allows those vulnerabilities to be addressed. At the same time, however, there are many people now who have started selling their security research in private. So, for instance, there are people that find vulnerabilities in things like, you know, your cell phone or programs that run on your computer or the servers of, you know, major web providers. And instead of publicly disclosing them or working with the vendors to fix them, they sell that information to brokers for a lot of money. And for the most part, those are then turned around and sold to governments.
But which government? The U.S. government or China or, I don't know, Romania?
It's not clear. It's oftentimes not clear. The people selling the vulnerabilities usually don't have the best visibility into where they go. You know, in all cases, they're used the same way, generally offensively. So they're used by governments in order to gain access to, you know, people's computers, to the servers of major providers and things like that.
Do you think most hackers see themselves as Americans first or like global citizens or hacker citizens first? I mean, where's the loyalty?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question of like most hackers right now is an interesting question. You know, it's not clear what our cultural norms really are. And in some ways, I think we're operating based on a cultural context that was defined, you know, in the 90s or whenever the hacker community really sort of convalesced. And that, you know, that context has changed. You know, I think it is time for us to reevaluate what are the things that we value? You know, what are the things that we want to encourage?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about NSA surveillance and the hacker view, getting the perspective from the big Black Hat and DEF CON conferences in Las Vegas this week. A lot of security professionals there, a lot of hackers there, and they work all sides. Moxie Marlinspike was among them attending the conference, the Black Hat Conference this week. Kim Zetter's been covering it for Wired Magazine. Alan Butler's here from the Electronic Privacy Information Center in Washington. In his talk at Black Hat yesterday in Vegas, General Alexander, director of the NSA, emphasized there's a lot of oversight. People aren't just rubber stamping things here. That keeps things running right, he said.
I've heard some people say that the court is a rubber stamp. I'm on the other end of that table with federal judges. And anybody here who's been up against a federal judge knows that these are people with tremendous legal experience that don't take any, I'm trying to think of a word here, from even a four-star general. They want to make sure that what we're doing comports with the Constitution and the law.
General Keith Alexander before the Black Hat Conference yesterday. Alan Butler, he's saying there that the FISA court, which is supposed to oversee a lot of this activity, is no rubber stamp. In the leaks and the investigations and hearings since, what have we learned about that? Does the FISA court look tough, Alan?
Well, I think that, again, as to the telephone metadata program, we believe that the FISA court's order is unlawful, and we've appealed to the Supreme Court with that exact theory, and we'll see how that plays out. But the question is now squarely before the Supreme Court, and I think it's not merely that the court is seen as a rubber stamp. I think that it's a process that's not adequately adversarial. And we've learned more and more over the past few months that it's a process that's evolving interpretations of the Constitution and the foreign intelligence statutes in secret without these opinions being made public. And really, that's an important body of law that we're not able to evaluate when we're considering these amendments to the statutes and when we're discussing these issues in the public.
Comes back to basics and credibility. Moxie, we've got listeners, you know, who are very savvy here and others just kind of tuning in on this. One of them writes at our website, says, Monica says, I'm confused about the term hackers as used for people at the conventions. Are these illegal hackers or security professionals who go after hackers to protect their websites? It's a big, broad term these days, Moxie. Sort of line it out for us.
Well, I think the term is sort of amorphous, but generally just means people who are interested in computer security and in sort of figuring things out. There's been a transition over time from a hacker community to a security industry, which has sort of, you know, changed the culture, it's changed the word, and it's changed the kinds of things that people are interested in.
So you've got the full spectrum there. Brandy writes on Facebook, she heard the heckling we played early in the hour. She says, heckling, how immature. You were on Twitter saying, Moxie, quoting you here, General Alexander doesn't have to act rude with the power of the NSA behind him. Being rude is the only power we have. Who's the we there, Moxie? What do you mean?
I mean just the people that are in the audience, you know. I think a lot of people, you know, came there who were critical of General Alexander and the things that the NSA has been doing, but, you know, wanted to be part of this conversation. But it's not really a conversation, you know, that they're not interested in having a dialogue. They're just trying to do damage control. So I don't think that, you know, I don't think that it's worth us, like, pretending that this is a conversation. I think that we should treat it for what it is. And you know, and send the message that we can. You know, we had the opportunity to boo General Alexander off the stage, which I think would have been very powerful. And you know, we don't have, you know, a large intelligence apparatus at our disposal. You know, just booing is the only thing, is the only real power we have.
Shouting freedom doesn't seem so bad, I guess. Steve in Franklin, Connecticut. Steve, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
And I think what your guest just said leads right into what I'm saying. I have to applaud General Alexander for reaching out to the public, especially the hackers. Mm-hmm. How do we know that they're not interested in having a conversation? He's offering an olive branch. Maybe he is doing some damage control, but he's asking to have a conversation. I understand we feel that the government is light at times. This is wrong. But the general is asking for help. My question would be, do all of the hackers really want to help our government, our nation, remain free from terrorism? Sometimes I wonder. We must all realize that there is no such thing as total freedom. We as the public cannot know everything, because if we know everything, so will our enemies. And if the people are naive enough to believe we do not have enemies around the world, then God help us. That's my comment.
Steve, you lay it down very plain and clear, and let me put that to you. Moxie, Marlin, Spike, what do you say to that observation?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's, you know, people tend to try and frame this in terms of a balance between freedom and privacy. And, you know, to the extent that that's true, I think the problem is that, you know, people like the NSA are not incentivized to be looking for that balance. You know, they are working on things that are built out of careers, billions in revenue, you know, in enormous defense contracts, right? It's this giant steamroller that is not actually looking for a balance. And, you know, I think what we have to do is try to, you know, add attention to that, you know, to so that maybe we come out with something that, you know, is at least somewhat reasonable. And, you know, I don't think that we do that by starting with compromise, by starting with, okay, yeah, you know, you're being reasonable, so we're being reasonable, because they're not being reasonable. You know, they're starting at the exact opposite end of the spectrum, and I think that, you know, we have to start by, you know, saying what we really want. And using the power that we have. And I think in a situation like yesterday, the power that we have would have been to send a message by, you know, booing him off the stage.
Kim Zetter, that didn't happen. There was a lot of applause, as Moxie said. I mean, what about the interests of the people in the hall yesterday? Some very significant security companies represented there, no doubt doing a lot of work with the government. I mean, where's their interest lie here? After all, Edward Snowden was working for a private company making big money on this work that he now exposes and says is wrong. Well, that's his view. I mean, do these companies want more transparency, or, you know, do they make money in the dark?
Well, I think that there's a danger in lumping all companies together. I think that, you know, there are companies that are not bothered by this at all, and take the view of the latest caller that they need to help the NSA protect the country. But I think that there are some significant companies, particularly technology companies, that have tried to fight and push back. We don't know the full extent of these activities. We had an interesting peek at this recently with some documents that came out regarding Yahoo. Yahoo had attempted to fight a court order, a FISA court order, back in 2008, seeking some bulk collection of data. And they cited the Fourth Amendment. They cited a number of issues. And in that case, the judge forced Yahoo to comply. It was very interesting, one of the things that the judge said. The judge said that the government had assured her that it does not maintain a database of incidentally collected information from non-targeted U.S. persons.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we now know that that's not true. And the X-Key score talks about this database of information that, of course, is going to include incidentally collected information on Americans. So this goes to speak to what Alan was talking about, the transparency of the courts. We don't know the full extent of what has gone on there. We don't know how many companies have tried to fight this. We know that they've been unsuccessful. So I believe that there are companies that are pushing back, but we just don't know the extent of this because this is all secret.
Of course, Yahoo's not in the security business. Others are. Myron in Charleston, South Carolina. Myron, you're on the air.
Hi. A couple of weeks ago, you all had on a program featuring the debate about Snowden. And in terms of the security companies, one of your guests or on another program was a former head of state who's now heading one of these companies, and it may have even been the fact that Snowden worked for. These guys have the keys to the kingdom, and they are essentially saying, trust us. Additionally, no one is ever speaking about, with this level of access, the possibility for insider information in terms of economics. It seems that we have a laissez-faire attitude toward economics and money that has transferred over into security, that is transferred over into stepping and stomping on the Bill of Rights. And in closing, if I could just say, my hat's off to the hecklers, because if the guy wanted a discussion, there would have been a panel discussion. Yep. He had a PR opportunity.
Myron, I appreciate your call. Alan Butler, it's certainly true in Booz Allen's case. You've had people from the very highest level of the American security now in the private sector. What about that relationship and whether it leans toward the kind of openness that we need or the opposite, Alan?
Well, I think it definitely leans opposite. I think that those types of relationships don't engender the type of public trust and don't facilitate the type of transparency that we need in this system. And I think that, really what we're dealing with right now in the Senate hearing yesterday is just another example of this, is that, congressional leaders are shocked at the extent of this program, specifically the metadata program. And that's a sign that we don't have enough pushback, that we don't have enough public knowledge about how these systems work in order to make sure that they're complying with the law and to make sure that we can, keep them in check.
Of course, we had James Woolsey, former head of the CIA, who was a senior VP at Booz Allen for global security. The connections get very tight there. Phil in Augusta, Georgia. Phil, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
This is much ado about very little. They talk about the metadata program, right? What you're talking about is gathering a lot of data and trying to find some intelligence out of that data. The NSA doesn't have some kind of a pipeline into the system and be able to download all of the information of who calls who, from where, at what time, okay? What it does is it goes to Verizon or it goes to AT&T and gives them a court order and says, we need this information. AT&T sells them the information. Now they have a database. It's for a specified period of time. What they're looking for is for cells. Once they get the cells, right, the intelligence analysts are able to go in and use these different tools. XT score is one of them.
Cells, you mean terrorist cells?
Yes, exactly what we're looking for. The NSA doesn't care about, what your financials are. It doesn't care about, are you cheating on your spouse? It doesn't care about any of that stuff. The intelligence analysts are there looking for specific information. And having to go to the FISA courts every single time they find a target that they have to try to track, okay, waste a lot of time and a lot of energy. And when they have these tools, these databases that they can use, and the truth is we have warehouses and warehouses of data that we will never, ever look at unless we absolutely have to.
Phil, we've got it. That's more or less the argument, exactly as you make it, that General Alexander was making to Black Hat in Las Vegas yesterday. Alan Butler, what about Phil's description, or for that matter, maybe General Alexander's, of the NSA's capacity? Is it forthright? And what's analyzed? And who has access to it? And under what circumstances, Alan?
I think that's the wrong question. We have laws for a reason. The Congress has passed the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act in 1978 for a reason. We had, prior to that law, an entire congressional committee, the Church Committee, that looked at surveillance abuses and decided that we need to follow certain legal procedures when we obtain information, especially information about U.S. persons. And this current program does not comport with that law as it's been updated and enacted by Congress in the last 10 years. And that's the problem. That's the question. And that's what's bothering people about this program, specifically the metadata program.
Moxie, I want to come back to our caller, Steve, in Connecticut, saying, look, if we make everything transparent, then everybody will know it. There are real threats in the world. We can't do that. You and others talked about the consciences of hackers in this country, but we've all seen the maps of, giant sort of hacker operations in China and elsewhere. I don't know if they check their conscience at the door or how they see morality and ethics when it comes to this realm. I mean, what about Steve's argument that, we have to do this? It's a world of threats. Let's get on the stick and keep our defenses up and not get too distracted by some of these questions, Moxie.
Well, I think you're right. There are threats in the world. And the collection of this kind of information is itself dangerous for that reason. You know, I think everyone just sort of assumes that the NSA is capable of keeping all of this information secure, and I actually think that's pretty unreasonable. You know, we heard yesterday General Alexander a number of times, you know, talking about the auditability of this data, and he kept saying 100% auditability.
Meaning you can go back and know what they had, where, when, and what was used and seen and read and all that.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. Which, and that would imply 100% security. Which I think everybody in that room should know is not possible. It's never possible. And, you know, the problem is that the more valuable your data is, the harder it is to secure it. That, and in many ways, defensive security is about raising the cost of an attack, making it, you know, too expensive for an attacker to want to spend the resources based on what they would get, you know, out of a successful attack. And when you have this much information, it becomes, you know, nearly impossible to, you know, raise the cost high enough because it's so valuable. And we've seen that with, you know, tremendous security compromises at major companies that take security very seriously and staff that I believe are probably much more talented than the staff of the NSA. Like Google, for instance, you know, suffered major breaches thought to have originated in China. So even just collecting this kind of information is also dangerous from a security perspective.
But this debate's going to go on. It is by no means over. We've got plenty of it going on in Washington. It's really interesting to get the perspective of this group, hackers, security professionals, meeting in such numbers this week in Las Vegas. We're grateful to the three of you for helping us do that. Moxie Marlin-Spike, thank you for joining us today. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Kim Zetter with Wired Magazine. Thank you so much, Kim. And Alan Butler with the Electronic Privacy Information Center. Thank you, Alan.
Thanks.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.